We are not going to talk about Shakespeare today. That is the name of a Shakespeare comedy, Much Ado About Nothing. But you didn't come to church to hear about Shakespeare. If you're not a fan, as I'm not, then we'll leave him there. Regardless, I do want to talk to you about nothing. I want to talk to you about nothing because it's a very popular concept in our culture today that nothing explains everything. And I'm not playing word games. It is a very popular concept in our scientific community today that nothing explains everything. And so I want to address this today. I'm going to show you today, as part of this talk, what they say. I'm not going to put words in the mouths of anybody. I'm going to let top scientists in their field tell you what they think. And then I'm going to let you look at it. And I'm going to give you some problems with it. I'm going to point out some problems with it. But I have maybe 10 or 11 video clips. And I think I only have like one video clip that's from a Christian perspective. All of the others are from an atheist or agnostic perspective, from people who are hostile to our faith. And we're going to talk about some stuff that may be pretty deep today, but I'm going to bring it down to a level. I've been working really hard to bring this down to a level that everybody will get it. Everybody will get it. But I think we need to know that our faith stands up. The truth of God's word stands up to the brightest minds that are against it. The truth of God's word stands up to the greatest challenges that any of its opposition can bring up. I want you to leave here today confident that when the Bible says that God said and therefore things were created, I want you to leave here confident that that's exactly what happened. God is the best explanation for the universe that we live in. And I want to show you that by responding to the best arguments against it, against God, against this him participating in the creation of our universe. So I want to start by defining what the word nothing is. And I'm not going to go to the Bible dictionary or Bible philosopher. I'm going to go to Wikipedia, okay? Here's how Wikipedia defines the word nothing, so that we're all on the same page. If we're going to talk about nothing, let's be on the same page what nothing means, okay? I think we all know what nothing means, I think, but let's define it clearly. Nothing is a pronoun denoting the absence of anything. Nothing is a pronoun associated with nothingness. Nothingness is the state of being nothing, the state of non-existence of anything or the property of having nothing. My fonts were different. That's why it's like that. It changed fonts on me. But is that clear? Nothing is a pronoun denoting the absence of anything. Aristotle's definition and Socrates' definition, which I've shared with you before, is very funny. It says, nothing is what rocks dream about. Okay? It gives us a good picture of what nothing is. Nothing is nothing. It's not something, it's nothing. I want us to be clear on this. And so I'm going to show you a video now, and I'm going to show you a few people telling you that nothing is absolutely not nothing, and that nothing started everything, okay? But everything from the animal planet, this is a clip from an animal planet program, to top-notch scientists telling you that nothing is the answer to everything.
To understand these facts, we've had to turn to science. Where did they come from? And how did they get so darned outrageous? Well, it all started with nothing.
And then it goes on to say how nothing exploded and created all the planets, and then from there, everything else that we know in life. It all started with what? What did the animal planet tell you? It all started with what? Nothing. Nothing, okay? So even on the animal planet, you get that. Now, there's a couple of books that have come out recently that really highlight this idea. And believe me, there's going to be many more books. This is going to hit you sooner or later. May as well be ready for it, okay? Lawrence Krauss at Arizona State University wrote a book called The Universe from Nothing. Why, and listen to the subtitle, Why There Is Something Rather Than Nothing. A universe from what? A universe from what does it say? What's the title? A universe from? Nothing, okay? Then Stephen Hawking also wrote a book called The Grand Design, in which he concludes that everything came from nothing. Okay? So we're all on the same page. This is what is being proposed. And by the way, Lawrence Krauss and Stephen Hawking are both brilliant, brilliant scientists. It's a little baffling, honestly, how someone so brilliant is able to make statements like this that are so, so not brilliant. Okay? I'm trying really hard not to be sarcastic, because that's not going to help our discussion. So we're going to try to keep that out of it.
There is one answer that appears to avoid this problem. The idea is that the universe could be spontaneously created out of nothing.
Okay, that guy is from Tufts University, Valenkin, a physicist. The idea is that the universe came from nothing, okay? The universe spontaneously created itself out of nothing. Okay, this is not something that we're making up here. This is exactly what they're arguing. Stephen Hawking, in his book, The Grand Design, says, because there's a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from what? Nothing. The universe can create itself from nothing. Spontaneous generation is the reason there is something rather than nothing, why the universe exists, why we exist. When you read the book, Stephen Hawking is telling you that we don't need God anymore because they found the answer of how things started, and God is no longer necessary. How did things start? Spontaneously from nothing. Okay? So you don't have to be a rocket scientist. You don't have to be a science major to know that there's something wrong with this argument. Maybe we can't put our finger on it because we're not experts. Something inside of you and your rational thinking mind has got to tell you, wait a minute, there's a problem with this. How can something come from nothing? What comes from nothing? Nothing. Nothing plus nothing equals nothing, okay? I mean, this is not hard, okay? So listen
and
to Peter
maybe
Atkins.
That our universe happens to be that happy chance of nothing transforming itself into what seems to be something that seems to persist.
He sounds so convinced. Peter Atkins, Oxford University. Our universe seems to be the answer. It came from nothing, and it seems to be something. What? He's not even sure what things are, because things are not. They just seem to be. And they came from seemingly nothing. Okay? I'm going to go back a second. This video clip is a little bit longer. I want you to meet Lawrence Krauss. He's the author of the book, A Universe from Nothing. And then I'm going to pick a few quotes from him just to remind you of what he said. But please listen to this dialogue. He's on the Colbert show, and Stephen Colbert interviews him. And man, he gets right to the point, and you're going to hear some really funky ideas, okay? Just listen.
Welcome back, everybody. My guest tonight is a cosmologist whose new book is about why there is something instead of nothing. I'm guessing because his publisher gave him a deadline. Please welcome Lawrence Krauss. Sir, let's get the CV out here, because it is not unimpressive.
Thank you.
Okay, you are a cosmologist.
That's not a cosmetologist.
Not a cosmetologist. Okay, because I was going to ask you for a mani-pedi. Okay. A theoretical physicist, and you're the director of Origins Project at Arizona State University. The new book is called A Universe from Nothing. Why There Is Something Rather Than Nothing. A book about the ultimate question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, doctor. Sweep away thousands of years of mystery and awe at creation that let the greatest minds in civilizations all over the world to lead to one point, a single divine loving creator. Destroy it. Why is there something instead of nothing?
It's really easy, because nothing's unstable. And in fact, there's no evidence for any deity. Everything we know about the laws of physics, which are remarkable and have changed everything about the way we think about the universe, what nothing is and what something is. This table here is mostly empty space.
This table cost me $500. Well, you tell me I got ripped off? Well, no, wait, let's go back a second, okay? Nothing is unstable. What do you mean that nothing is unstable. Nothingness is nothingness.
Well, the physics has changed what we mean by nothing. In fact, nothing is a empty space, is a boiling, bubbling brew of virtual particles popping in and out of existence.
Oh, wait,
so
wait,
fast,
no, that's not nothing. That's something. Why are those virtual particles there?
Because of the laws of quantum mechanics. And they tell us that even though you can try and count and see what's in there in empty space, you'll see nothing. But in fact, one of the biggest mysteries, and the reason I wrote the book, one of the greatest discoveries of the last 50 years is that, in fact, empty space weighs something.
Empty space weighs something.
In fact, it's the dominant stuff in the universe. Nothing
is
almost everything.
I am never going to lose those last 5 pounds.
Never. And in fact, it's worse because, in fact, unlike normal stuff, you may have learned in high school that gravity sucks, but in fact, it doesn't. With empty space, it's repulsive. And that empty space is forcing the universe to expand ever faster, faster and faster.
So the nothingness is forcing us apart.
It's forcing us apart. Well, we're not going to be forced apart, but the galaxies are.
Okay, you say you haven't been rubbing any of that baby shampoo on your head, have you? With the THC in it?
Well,
no?
I'm no
You're
comment.
Clean?
No comment.
You're clean? Leave me a hair sample. We'll check it later. All right. So, okay, you say there are three different types of nothing.
That's right.
What are the three? I didn't know there was such a variety. A sampler platter
I would have thought
nothing.
You'd be an expert on it. But
on
in any
nothingness?
Case, yeah.
Yes.
In any case, there are three different kinds of nothing. First, empty space, which I'd say is probably the nothing of the Bible, an eternal, dark, empty void.
Do you mean like a true hard vacuum?
Exactly.
That would be, that's nothing that you're talking about?
Most of people would have thought that would be nothing.
That's what I think nothing is.
And then I
also
tell you
Baltimore.
But then if I tell you that that kind of nothing actually is unstable, if you wait long enough, that kind of nothing will always produce particles.
By saying that it will...
If you wait long enough, the laws of quantum mechanics tell us that particles will burp out of empty space and eventually fill up a universe. It's really remarkable.
Is it that, to me, that sounds like the empty space may be empty to us, but it is some sort of sheath or membrane between us
there.
And some other reality.
No, there's nothing. Well, there's absolutely nothing there until there's something.
What's the second type of nothing?
Okay, well, then if you don't buy that, then I could say, well, you might say, well, that's not nothing because there's space.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out if you apply quantum mechanics to gravity, then in fact space itself becomes dynamical and universes, spaces themselves and time can pop into existence where there was none before.
So in some theoretical end space before the moment
Sounds
of creation,
mm-hmm.
there can be no time and no space and no energy?
And no energy. Zero
and then
energy.
Suddenly from nowhere and from nothing comes something and somewhere.
And all sorts of stuff. And it sounds like the ultimate free lunch. And
yes,
it is.
It is.
It is. And it really, and what's remarkable is it's possible without any supernatural shenanigans. And
stop with that.
Why?
Why is what you're doing, whatever this is? Because obviously, because I am not in the priesthood, I can't understand the scrawls on the blackboards you people down at where are you?
Well, that's why I wrote
where
the
you?
Book so you could
where
actually.
Are you Arizona State
Arizona State
okay
mm-hmm.
you priests of theoretical physics
mm-hmm.
You can explain to each other what you mean with your language of math and I have to take that on faith.
No, in fact you should be skeptical.
I am, and
in fact you should. I know, and that's why you should. Why I tried to find the arguments in the book.
But I will never read it. So why other people should? You should buy it.
Buying it is important.
Buying
is
good.
Yeah,
okay, but why does what you're saying have to be an attack on my God?
It doesn't have to be an attack.
But that's all you've done. You've attacked my God for the last 6 minutes.
No. You have. All I've said is you don't need him.
That's an attack.
No,
of course we are here to love God, serve God.
The universe, as we understand it, we've changed our minds about the universe. We've learned that the universe is more remarkable than anything we ever thought before. And in fact, changing your mind and, in fact, being wrong is wonderful. You should try it sometime. It's really amazing. It means that the fact that the universe is more remarkable than the fairy tales that were talked about by Bronze Age literate peasants before we knew the Earth orbited the Sun.
You're not attacking at all, but go ahead.
No, but I mean,
but so you
celebrate.
So you believe there's no God?
I don't even use the word believe. The point is
no God.
There's no need for God.
Is there God?
It's
what
unlikely.
Would you say?
There's no evidence for God.
Okay.
There's no evidence for God.
So let me ask something. If there is no God, okay, if there is no thing called God, if he is nothing, can't something come from him? Lawrence Krauss, thank you so much. Lawrence Krauss, the universe from God. We'll be right back.
And then he shows the book and says, a universe from God. Interesting. Just take a step back, okay? This guy is a director of the Origins Project at Arizona State University. So you're like, what? Like, how? Okay? Listen to some of the things he said. Nothing is unstable. That's him. Nothing is unstable. Huh? Nothing is nothing. How can nothing be unstable? There's three different kinds of nothing. Okay? If you wait long enough, the laws of quantum mechanics tell us that particles will burp out of empty space and eventually fill up the entire universe. And there is absolutely nothing there in empty space until there is something. So universes can pop into existence where there was nothing. So he's taking one step to the next, to the next, to the next. Obviously, nothing has been redefined to mean something. Because it's not just empty space, it's teeming with virtual particles. Okay? Virtual particles, remember that. We're going to come back to that in a few minutes. Okay? And get a little bit more into that. But it's kind of hard to believe that someone would actually believe this. But now, the question then is, okay, scientists follow what? The evidence. That's what science is about. It's about following the evidence. How is evidence important? Okay, let me show you three skeptics, three non-believers, three people who do not believe in God that are going to tell you how important evidence is, okay? Because again, I don't want to give you my perspective. I want to let them speak for themselves, okay? Okay, so first of all, John Locke, according to him, the mark of a rational person is not entertaining any proposition with greater assurance then the proof it is built upon will warrant. Okay? So John Locke says, if you're a rational person, you're not going to believe anything to a greater degree than the evidence you have to support it. Okay? Let's move on. How about David Hume? Again, another skeptic. Listen to his argument or his point. A wise man proportions his beliefs to the evidence. Okay? A wise man proportions his beliefs to the evidence. And then W.K. Clifford, it is wrong always, everywhere, and for anyone to believe anything upon insufficient evidence. I mean, it doesn't get any clearer than that. These are skeptics. These are non-believers. These are people telling you that you should not believe anything that you don't have enough evidence for. So the key question is, what is the evidence of all of this something from nothing? Okay? I'm going to let them tell you. Okay? Listen to them. This is these scientists giving you the evidence that they have that everything came from nothing. Okay, so just listen. Peter Vilenkin again.
You ask, is there evidence that the universe began by this spontaneous nucleation out of nothing? I don't think we can produce any evidence for that.
That's pretty honest. I don't think we can produce any evidence for that. Okay, a universe from nothing, you're asking me for evidence. Well, I don't think we can produce how many? Any evidence, okay? If we're to proportion our beliefs to the amount of evidence that we have, how much should we credit a universe from nothing? Their own words. Nothing, no evidence. Listen to the next guy, okay? Peter Atkins at Oxford.
Science cannot yet do, and one day I think it will have to turn to doing, is thinking about how a universe can come into existence without intervention from absolutely nothing, without a creator. And that's going to be really tough for science.
Science cannot explain it yet. But one day we're going to have to come up with some explanation without a creator, and that's going to be really hard for science, you think? Okay? So we saw that the evidence is really important. We now see that they have absolutely no evidence to explain it. So why are we proposing something for which we have absolutely no evidence? To me, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Science really doesn't have a clue about origins. They just told you. We don't know. We're going to have to someday come up with an explanation, but we don't know. Let me just show you how much science is lost in this area. Now, I'm not bashing science. I love science. I think we need more Christian scientists. If you're a science major, go for it. We need more people that have rational common sense, that know that there is a God and a creator, to go out and become brilliant scientists, okay? I'm not bashing science. What I'm telling you is there's limits to what science knows. There are things that science does not know. Let me show you, okay? 2014 Scientific America, okay? Black hole at the beginning of time. Do we live in a holographic mirage from another dimension? Okay, that's a August of 2014 issue of Scientific America. Here's the spread where it opens and it starts to spread. The black hole at the beginning of time. And here's a summary that Scientific America gives you of the article. I'll read it to you because it's hard to read from there. Cosmologists have detailed a remarkably accurate description of the history of the universe. But a few profound questions seem to defy all attempts at understanding. One of these mysteries is the nature of the Big Bang itself, the sudden, violent origin of the universe from a point of infinite density. The authors have developed ideas that would explain how the Big Bang came to be. They imagine, that's part of science. They imagine that it emerged as a consequence of the formation of a black hole in a higher dimension universe. This theory provides answers to a number of difficult questions, and it could also be tested. Okay, 2014, August, Scientific America. Black holes is the answer. That's how it began, okay? Same year, different magazine, Nature magazine. Now it's not these guys writing it. Now it's Stephen Hawking. And you know what the headline is? Stephen Hawking says there are no black holes. Wait a minute. What do you mean? Notion of an event horizon from which nothing can escape is incompatible with quantum theory, physicists claim. American Scientific American, they printed a reprint of that story. Stephen Hawking says there are no black holes. Okay, so you get the picture? Science has no clue about origin. One guy will tell you black holes, the guy next out there are no black holes. They have no idea how old the universe is either. I didn't put it up on here, but I can show you that they have no idea that how old the universe is. 13.8 billion is supposed to be the number now of the age of the universe from the Big Bang till now. Except they found some stars now. They found a particular star that's a little older than that. That's 16 billion light years away. Wait a minute. So how can the star be older than the universe? So they had to get a team together and make some adjustments on that measurement. And all of the adjustments and all of the changes they did, they brought it down to 14.5 billion. It's still older than the universe. So how old is the universe? How old are the stars? Exactly. Okay. Now, there are... Mind you, I'm not bashing science. To be able to take and land a rover on Mars is like mind-boggling. And have it take pictures and send it back to us, mind-boggling. The Hubble telescope, what it's doing is amazing. Science has progressed a lot, but when it comes to the topic of origins, it's lost. Not only in cosmology, same thing happens in biology. Science has no clue how that first living cell came about. No clue. Seven theories and all of them fall apart. None of them work. So it's not as if we're the idiots because we believe this. It's like nobody knows, but we're wrong. That's how it's been panned out lately. So let's deal with this. Let's deal with them really quickly. We're going to deal with all of these objections just so that you see that there's nothing to be afraid of. I told you at the beginning of our talk today that what I want you to understand is that the truth of God's word stands up to the greatest attacks from the most brilliant minds that want to attack it. Because you can't go against truth. Truth always wins. Truth always stands out. Truth always wins the day. Okay? So let's deal with it. Stephen Hawking. Because there's a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. Spontaneous creation is the reason there is something rather than nothing, why the universe exists, why we exist. Okay, that's the thesis of his book, by the way. That is the idea of the grand design. That's the thesis that he sets out to prove. That's his argument. That's what he wants you to understand. The main point of his book. There's so much wrong with that, that we could spend an hour on that paragraph right there from a philosophical perspective telling you everything that's wrong with that. Okay? So let me just save you a lot of time and give you a synopsis. Okay? Analyzing it. Three distinct levels of self-contradiction in one paragraph. That's like unheard of. That's like, you to find two contradictions in the same sentence is hard. To find three, it's like you got to purposely set out to contradict yourself to write something like this. Okay? So let's look at him. First of all, he says the universe came from nothing, but it turns out that that is something. Okay? It came from gravity. Okay? But wait a minute. Then it's not nothing. There's something. Okay? So, or actually the laws of gravity. But let's give him a little more credit. Let's believe that he maybe believes that gravity does exist. Okay? So gravity's there, and gravity brings forth the universe. So it doesn't come from nothing. That's a self-contradictory statement. He says it's coming from something. That something is called gravity. Okay, that's a problem. Second problem, he says that it created itself, which is a self-contradiction. Nothing can create itself. We know of nothing in our known universe that can create itself. Nothing. Everything that comes into existence has to be brought into existence by something else. We don't know of it. It's called cause and effect. If you take out the law of causation, throw away science. Close all the science departments and go home. We'll all study basket weaving. Because the science is based on cause and effect. What is he telling you? An effect without a cause. An effect without a cause. It created itself. That is self-contradictory in several levels. Okay? Especially from a scientist. And then he says that the law of gravity explains the universe, but the law depends for its existence on something to describe. A law is vacuous. A law is nothing. A law doesn't have any physical existence. In philosophy, we call it has no ontological significance. It's not something. It's just how you explain the interaction of things. So the explanation brought everything into existence. That's what he's saying. Another contradiction. So you say, well, I mean, how can somebody so brilliant in other things come up with these kind of sayings? We're going to come back to laws in a second. Remember all the things this guy said? Nothing. There's absolutely nothing. What does he ascribe, and he and other scientists too, that everything came from? If we wait long enough, the laws of quantum mechanics tell us that particles will burp out of the empty space and eventually fill up the entire universe. The laws are the ones behind it. Stephen Hawking says the law of gravity. He says the law of quantum mechanics. It's the laws that do it. So let's take a look at that. What about the laws, okay? Do laws create things, okay? Again, let's make it really simple to understand. It's crazy to suggest that laws are responsible for creating the world. The laws of physics can explain how a jet engine works. They certainly cannot explain how it came into existence in the first place, right? You can take laws of physics and explain how a jet engine works, but those laws don't explain how it was created to begin with. They haven't got the power to do that. Scientists expect to develop theories involving laws to describe natural phenomena, and these laws and theories enable them to make predictions. And we've done really good in this. Science has advanced a lot in this area. However, the theories and the laws on their own don't even cause anything, much less create it. Theories don't cause things. They explain things. They don't create things. They explain things. So to say that the laws are what brought these things into existence is ludicrous. Nobody would believe that for a second, okay? Physical laws cannot create anything. They're merely mathematical descriptions of what normally happens. That's all it is. You have a mathematical description of what happens in nature normally. That's a law. It is so obvious from Hawking's own book. Hawking gives you an example, and he contradicts himself with his example. His example shows you that the laws can't do it, okay? The first example he gives of physical law is the sun rises in the east. Okay? Let's look at that. But the law that the sun rises in the east doesn't create the sun or the universe that it rises in, right? That's just a law that explains that it comes out in the East. It's descriptive, it's predictive, but it's not creative. So to say that the laws did it, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Newton's law of gravity doesn't create gravity, does it? Because gravity was around before Newton was. So his law didn't create it. His law attempted to explain it. Didn't even do a good job at that. He admitted himself that it didn't. So watch this video, and then let's look at what the scientists say in regards to this.
We must turn to the theory of quantum mechanics. It describes how, in the tiny world of the atom, small particles seem to appear and disappear for no obvious reason. Apparently absurd. Imagine if, in our everyday world, people appeared and disappeared without obvious cause. And yet the theory of quantum mechanics describes how this can happen at the atomic level, and that might offer an alternative to a creator.
You watch that video and say, wow, I didn't know that. That in quantum mechanics and in quantum physics, things pop into existence out of nothing. All the time, in great quantities, particles pop into existence, and then they disappear. They pop into existence and they disappear. Imagine if people would pop into existence and then disappear in everyday life. Oh, but that may hold the explanation to the origin of the universe. Let's deal with this, okay? Quantum physics is super complicated. I'm gonna make it so easy for you. I'm not a quantum physicist, so I'm not even gonna try to be the scientist here. I'm gonna let another scientist, again, somebody who's not a Christian, who's actually hostile to God, because I've seen some of his videos and he curses God, he mocks God, he makes fun of God, but he's a brilliant astrophysicist, and he's a brilliant theorist, physical theorist, and he has written I don't know how many papers. Well, let me introduce you to him, okay? His name is Matt Strassler. Currently, he's a visiting scholar at Harvard University, full professor at Rutgers with over 75 papers on string theory and particle physics, attended Princeton, a PhD from Stanford. He's been a professor at Rutgers, University of Washington, and the University of Pennsylvania, UPenn, and now he's at Harvard as a visiting professor. This guy is not an idiot. He knows what he's talking about. So here's what he does. He wants to explain to us this whole idea of particles, you know, that are virtual particles and quantum physics and all of that in terms that we understand. Man, I read his essay and it blew me away. It was so easy to understand. You know, pretty technical in some areas, but if you have a little bit of science background, you can make out. And then the great thing about the essay is, by the way, I have copies of it. If you want it at the end, if you like science and this is something, I'll give you a copy of his. It's like 8 pages where he explains this whole idea of particles from his perspective, non-Christian, non-biblical perspective. But he explains this. And when he explains this, you realize something. You realize there's a problem with the video you just saw about things popping into existence out of nothing. There's a problem with that. That's not exactly what happens. Again, like nothing really doesn't mean nothing. It means something. This popping into existence out of nothing doesn't really mean popping into existence out of nothing. It means something else, okay? So why all the deception? Why not clarity? Why not deal with things clearly? I think he took a lot of heat for this, but he had 330 comments on to this post that he did. Here's the package of comments that he had, 330 comments, and not a single comment told him you're wrong. This is not how it is. Every comment was, wow, now it makes sense. Comments from science students, engineering students, students in all fields of physics, and even some science professors telling him, hey, that's a great way to explain that. So what I'm going to show you is not controversial. This is how it's explained. But why don't we read it like this in our books? Why didn't you hear this in the video you just saw of things popping into nothing? Okay, so let's let him explain it, okay? Here's from his article, and let me just highlight some parts of it, okay? He says, the term virtual particle is an endlessly confusing and confused subject for the layperson. He says, the best way to approach this concept, I believe, is to forget you ever saw the word particle in the term. A virtual particle is not a particle at all. It refers precisely to a disturbance in the field that is not a particle. A virtual particle generally is a disturbance in a field that will never be found on its own, but instead, it is something that is caused by, not out of nothing, caused by the presence of other particles, often of other fields. So right now he's telling you, look, these things don't happen from nothing. They're caused by other particles. And a virtual particle is not a particle. It's a disturbance. And then he gives you a little diagram that really helps you see it. He says, okay, two electrons are on a collision path. When they come close to each other, and they interfere with the electric magnetic field, and those green things you see are like the ripples of that disturbance, that's what is called a virtual particle. It's not a particle. It's a disturbance. Two electrons come close or collide, and they create a disturbance. Electrons move like crazy. You know how many times this happens inside a cell? All the time. This happens all over the universe, everywhere. We are now beginning to see it. So it's not a lie to say that these disturbances pop up and disappear all the time, everywhere. And we keep, and it's amazing how they just pop out of nothing and then back. No, they're not out of nothing. They're caused by a disturbance to an electric magnetic field. And electrons are not the only causes. There are other causes. I'm not going to go more science because there's no need to go more science. What I want to point out is this. Okay, to call it a particle, like he said himself, is confusing. Why would you call it a particle? It's not a particle. It's not a particle. It's a disturbance. Okay? And he says, the minute the two things that cause the disturbance are gone, the disturbance is gone. So it comes into existence and comes out of existence because the disturbance is gone. And he gives other illustrations and more graphs. It's 8 pages long. He makes it very clear. But did you catch that? Did you see this? This is a theorist, a quantum theorist, well-renowned professor, scholar, telling you, look, it's not a particle. That name is misleading. And B, it doesn't pop into existence out of nothing. It is caused by other particles, oftentimes in other fields. So it doesn't come out of nothing. There's something already there. So people are very ignorant of quantum mechanics and quantum physics, and they'll throw that word out there, but half the time they don't know what they're talking about. They have no clue what they're talking about. Everybody's seen the dual slits and the, you know, the molecules that go through the slits, and if somebody's watching, they go through one. That's what everybody knows is quantum physics. There's so much more to that than that. So, and by the way, virtual particles, how are they defined by Wikipedia again? Okay? I'm not going to a Bible dictionary or a Christian philosopher or scientist. I'm letting the world tell you how it's defined. Listen to the definition according to Wikipedia. In physics, a virtual particle is an exemplary conceptual entity. Conceptual entity means it's here, nowhere else, okay? That is found in mathematical calculations about the field theory. It's only found where? In the mathematical formula, in the calculation. You write it into the calculation. That's where it's at. It refers to mathematical terms that have some appearance of representing particles. Some appearance of representing particles. They don't even represent particles completely. Some appearance, okay? Virtual particles, however, do not appear directly amongst observable and detectable input or output quantities of those calculations. They don't appear directly. Why don't they appear directly? Because the only thing that appears directly, that's the last part. The only thing that appears directly, that's what refers only to actual as distinct from virtual particles. Actual particles exist. Virtual particles don't. In and of themselves, they're a disturbance. They're not an actual particle. The definition tells you, doesn't tell you clearly. It tells you muddled, but it's there. Okay? So, volume, we have another video. Okay?
We have to wait for a non-theistic explanation. Very often you have to wait a long time. But that's what science is. Science is looking for non-theistic explanations of what we see in nature.
Science is waiting for some answer. We don't have one yet. But it can't be God. It's got to be non-theistic. God is not a good answer. Listen to this guy.
If you were religious and you would say God caused it, and that would be a satisfactory religious explanation. But science won't take that glib and clearly vacuous explanation.
So what these guys are saying is they're accusing Christians of being using God of the gaps. God of the gaps is the idea that if we don't know the answer, God's the answer. And until science finds an answer, and then science replaces God in that question, and then he becomes the answer of the next question, we don't know. That pins God against science. And that's not accurate. It's not accurate at all. The God of the gaps idea is faulty logic. It's not reasonable. Let me show you and illustrate it for you real quick. At the heart of this unnecessary is a childish confusion of categories, okay? On the one hand, we have law and mechanisms. On the other hand, we have agency. Law and mechanisms, that explains how something works, and agency, where it came from. Two different things, okay? And they both fall under the rubric of being by the way of explanation, but they're different kinds of explanations. Let me give you an example. I showed you the awesome Ford Mustang, okay? And I said, okay, one explanation of the Ford Mustang is the internal combustion engine, okay? That's the secret of the Ford Mustang. It's the internal combustion engine. The internal combustion engine explains how the Mustang is able to run and work and everything else. Or it's either that or it's Henry Ford. So you pick, which one is it? Is it Henry Ford or is it the internal combustion engine? It's both. You would laugh at me if I made you choose between the two. Henry Ford is not inside the hood of the Mustang, making it work. He was the one behind he'd invented, designed an internal combustion engine. He's the mind behind it, invented the first car. He's the agent, but the mechanism is the internal combustion engine. So when you take that and you apply it to this whole God of the gaps thing, to say that God is the cause is not to say that there is no mechanism or law. He's the agent cause, and then there's a mechanism that works behind it, that makes it work. So there is no God of the gaps contradiction here. To claim God is not an empty answer. It's giving you a agent behind what has been created. In other words, I showed you this, and I made you choose between the two, you would probably laugh at me, okay? So how many professors just don't get this, okay? An explanation in terms of a personal agent is not per se in conflict with an explanation of laws or mechanisms. Not at all. Actually, when you have an agent, it explains why there are laws and mechanisms. The agent designed the laws and the mechanisms that work. One does not negate or contradict or remove the necessity of the other. It's not in the same category of thought.
If you have two distinguished scientists, and in fact you can range many more on each side as you know, saying exactly opposite things, that's telling me that the conflict is not between science and belief in God, otherwise you'd expect all scientists to be atheists. But it's a worldview conflict. It's between scientists who have different worldviews.
You've got two competing explanations of the evidence. One says design, one says undirected processes. Both of them have larger philosophical or religious or anti-religious implications. So you can't say that one of those two theories is scientific and the other is unscientific simply because they have implications. Both have implications.
People who tell you, for example, that science tells you all you need to know about the world, or that science tells you that religion is all wrong, or science tells you there is no God, those people aren't telling you scientific things. They are saying metaphysical things, and they have to defend their positions for metaphysical reasons.
What is being presented to the public is, first comes the science, and then comes the worldview. I would want to argue that that may not be the case, that it may actually be the other way around, that the worldview comes first and is influencing the interpretation of science.
The three guys you heard there, John Lennox, has two PhDs and is a professor at Oxford, a PhD in philosophy and a PhD in mathematics, a professor at Harvard. You heard Stephen Meyer, okay, a PhD molecular biologist, who's written several books, phenomenal scientist. And you saw John Polkinghorne, who's he's like an icon at Oxford. He's a mathematical physicist, head of the physics department at Oxford, I don't know how long. These are brilliant guys, and what are they telling you? Look, we're scientists, we look at the evidence and we see God. They're scientists, they look at the evidence and they don't see God. So is the problem in the evidence? No. The problem is in a worldview. You approach the evidence from a worldview. And therefore, what you see is going to, you're going to try to make it fit your worldview. But as we just saw, these people are standing on thin air. You heard them say, we came out of nothing. And then when they're asked, what's the evidence? Oh, we don't have any evidence. What's the mechanism? How did we come from nothing? Oh, we don't know, but we have to figure it out without God, and that's going to be really hard. Okay, and this is somehow better than in the beginning God created an agent, an intelligent agent. Every day more discoveries are made that show you that there's an intelligence behind our universe. Every day. I've been posting some on Facebook. If you follow me on Facebook, I've been posting like a lot in the last few days. Because they're just coming out every day, every day, every day. They found the mechanism in some kind of grasshopper that is perfect design gears. You know, gears like in engines, gears. And, I mean, with rounded edges and everything, which is what we do to gears so they'll last a long time and they won't wear. Well, this animal has gears. And this animal has gears, and the gears are so that when it jumps, both legs will jump at the exact same time and it could jump straight forward. Otherwise, if one leg jumped, pushed one a fraction of a second before the other one, it would go, you know, to one side or to the other. It couldn't jump straight. And we believe that these gears just happen by unguided processes. No, that's design. That's brilliant physics right there in an animal. Shows you there's a mind behind the design of these animals. I'll finish with this G.K. Chesterton quote. It is absurd to complain that it is unthinkable for an unthinkable God to make everything out of nothing, and then to pretend that it is more thinkable that nothing should turn itself into everything. Think about that for a second. He was a brilliant man. It's unthinkable that God would make something out of nothing, but it's more thinkable that nothing made itself, turned into everything that we know. So much ado about nothing. Does nothing really explain everything? No. The only thing we pick up from all of this is that there's a sector of society that refuses to believe that God exists. But you can leave here today confident that you have the truth. And the truth that you have stands up to the scrutiny of the most brilliant scientists, Oxford, Tufts, Boston, all of these guys. They have nothing. Nothing that can challenge the truth of God's word. It stands up perfectly, brilliantly, and you don't have to be a scientist to know it. Amen? Let's stand up tonight.